to record anything. So with that, I'll let you introduce you to Baba, give him a hand, and let's hear his story. Thank you.
Well, my name is Jerry, but everybody calls me Baba. That's the nickname. And we're both alcoholics, so. Well, I'm going to be honest with you tonight. When I got here to Alcoholics Anonymous, I got a DUI. And I was 48 years old. And I'd never been in trouble. I didn't spend any time in jail or anything like that. And you know, I guess God takes care of young children and drunks, you know. But I did a lot of things the book talks about before I got here, you know, tried to quit drinking in different ways. And I drank from the time I was 14 years old, as best I can remember, going back through my fourth step and putting everything together once I was out of a fog. But I'll tell you this, I didn't get here on a real happy note. The night I got my DUI, my wife at the time, we're divorced now and I'm remarried, but I lived over in Tulare. And my home was only about, maybe a little over a quarter of a mile, close to a half mile from Tommy's Lounge. And it was during the fair time, and we had closed down all the beer booths at the fair, and we were in Tommy's Lounge and finishing off the night, you know. And I left Tommy's Lounge, and I guess they were watching us to leave or something, because I got about two or three blocks there on Las Pina, and the red lights came on. And I was driving this little half-ton step-side 72 Chevy pickup that I had spent a lot of years restoring and put a lot of my money into it. And I thought, well, I'm not going to let them tow this. I'll just drive on home, and they can do their thing in my driveway, you know. And that's a good thing, because they didn't take my truck, you know. And but anyway, they're doing the sobriety test, and my wife, you have to understand, at that time, she had got to Al-Anon about 4 years before I got to AA. And she was standing on the porch giving that Al-Anon salute. And the highway patrolman, there was a young one, and there was an older gentleman. And the young one, he says, well, he did pretty good on the test. And he says, you're not drinking anymore tonight, are you? And I says, hell no, the bars are all closed, you know. And I was a barroom drinker. I like to drink, raise hell, and have fun with people. You know, I'm a people person. I've always enjoyed people, and I hope I always will. And so anyway, the older one, he says, nah, he's far enough, we should take him in. And they were kind of arguing back and forth between themselves, and by this time, you know, the lights in the neighborhood, the houses were coming on and stuff. And one more time, I was entertaining him out there. And so anyway, the older gentleman, he looks at my wife standing up there with that Al-Anon salute. He says, what do you think, Mrs. Weatherford? Shall we take him or keep him? And her exact words, I could have killed her that night if I had got a hold of her, but her exact words were, take the son of a bitch and keep him. You know? And that was the beginning of getting, you know, real irritated about all this. And you know, I didn't mind doing everything I had to do, pay the fine and all that. But the biggest problem I had was the night after I got that, and the police, the highway patrol, they were taking me over here to the jail. And once we got there, they roughed me up pretty good because I was talking about their mothers on the way over, you know. And little guys have big mouths, you know, wise asses. And I was all that. And I got out the next day and morning, and they released me on my own recognizance, they said, and I had to appear in court. And anyway, that day I started getting deathly ill. And I didn't realize it, but I had quit drinking many times, and I had never had withdrawals from alcohol. Well, this time I was. I was ignorant to it. I didn't know what they were. But I was passing out. I was going to my knees, and I was passing kidney stones. And got to my doctor's office, and they took my blood pressure and stuff, and he saw what was going on. And his nurse, Rose, he told her, put him in the car, your car, take him across the street to Tulare District Hospital and admit him. I'll be right there. And she did. And it was real embarrassing because my wife at the time, she was the administrator secretary at that hospital, you know. So this, she was real proud of her old man, you know. But Dr. Gettle was my family doctor. He's not in this area anymore. He retired. He's in North Carolina now. And he's a good doctor. The disease was in his family, and he knew how to take care of me. He had been telling me for quite a few years that I might ought to do something about my drinking and giving me advice. And, of course, you know where I told him to put that advice, you know, where the sun don't shine. And I wouldn't listen to him. But he told me, he gave me a choice. He says, Jerry, you have good insurance. He says, you're having withdrawals from alcoholism. We can get these kidney stones blasted and take care of that. And he says, I can keep you here and get you through this withdrawal detoxing period, or I can send you to a recovery home. And I says, well, I'm here. Let's just go for it, you know. So it was pretty easy for me. Once they got that, everything, the needles in my arms, veins and everything, because he gave me that little button I could push when the pain got too bad, you know. And he got me through that. He knew what I was going through, and I had no idea. It's just like I was ignorant to what the disease of alcoholism is when I finally got to these rooms. And, you know, they don't teach you this in school and besides, I tell people, they ask me if I went to college. Well, I did a couple years of JC, but they asked me what school, and I tell them the School of Hard Knocks, you know, because I was pretty independent guy and was able to do things my way most of my life. But here, I was helpless over this. But he got me, this is very important to me. I don't ever want to forget it. It wasn't a spiritual awakening, but it was a rude awakening. And the doctor got me through that period where I could drink, I could sip some Jell-O, some juice, and finally some mashed potatoes and gravy down. You know, I hadn't ate in a few days. And I know they were probably feeding me through the veins, but he told me, your condition is such, your enzyme reading and everything I have to look for, he says, you're real close to having cirrhosis of the liver. And I had heard of cirrhosis of the liver, you know. My dad died as an alcoholic, and so I wasn't ignorant to that. But he told me, he says, If you will do what I tell you to do, eat this diet that I'm putting you on, you exercise, and you don't drink, he says, you have a 50-50 chance of your liver rejuvenating itself. And, you know, I did everything that doctor told me to do, but more important, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and finally surrendered, I did what you folks told me to do, you know. Took finally in my life, took some direction. And, you know, that was in September of 1988. And here I've lived, you know, a little over 26 years since then. And that applause should be for God and Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I had to do those a few Sundays out of Bob Wiley's. And so I went out there, and then I call them jailhouse attorneys. They I had three of those little white cards from Alternative Services. I don't know, any of you ever had those? And I was telling them the guys out there, and they told me, said, well, you know, there's, at the time, the Alano Club was over on Santa Fe Street. And it was right next door to Mata's Mexican restaurant. And we used to go on Mata's and have some Mexican food for lunch and some Dos Equis, you know, on a pretty regular basis. So, see, I didn't want anyone to know that I had to go to Alcoholics Anonymous because I was ashamed at that time. You know, I was really ashamed that I had went this far that I had to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. So what I would do, that little truck I was telling you about, I had a small business here in town, a muffler shop, and I knew most everyone in town. And so I'd park my little pickup right in front of Mata's. I'd go in their front door and out their back door and go in the back door of the Alano Club, you know, and because I didn't want anyone to know that I was going to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And I didn't even know what an Alano Club was at that time. But that's being real truthful and honest with you. And then when I went into those meetings, Mike here tonight reminded me of it when I first walked in tonight. There was a lady at that time, Carolyn. Mike was married to her for a while after that, and she would call on me every meeting, you know, and I'd tell her, my name's Jerry, and I'm here for information only. Thank you, you know. And that was the only honest thing I did at that time, you know, because I came in, I tried to put on a front, a face, you know, a mask, and let you know that I wasn't hurting at all. And inside, I was eaten up, you know. And so I finally stayed around for long enough. I heard a lot of things I needed to hear here, and I learned that this is a disease. And once I learned that it was a disease, I wanted to find out more about it. And so I did, and did everything I could, read, watch, listen to tapes, and that it was a disease. And once I learned that it was a disease, and I finally had a way to do something about it, I was at the point where I was teetering on that fence. Do I want to do this or do I not? And my biggest fear was, how will I ever have fun again, you know, without drinking or and using? Because, you know, all my life, this is 48 years, from the time I was 14 till I was 48, everything I did was under the influence of something most of the time. And I was scared to death on, you know, about how will I enjoy life again. Well, it wasn't long till I found out. I had two guys that sponsored me. One, they told me I was sick enough that there was Butch Mitchell. He died sober. Grassel. I don't know if any of you know Grassel. And those two, and they would go with me to my muffler shop, and one would stay there for about 4 hours, and he would leave, and then the other one would stay with me 4 hours. They said, "You are the most dangerous person you can be with right now." And they wouldn't leave me alone. And every night I get this. I thought I wouldn't have to go to many meetings because I refused to take any tests, blood tests or anything. So I found out that a California driver's license is a privilege. And they kept that for 6 months. And I had to hire a young man that got expelled from school, and I paid him $50 a day to drive me around. But these guys, every night on that door, and they were dragging me to meetings. And I was at the old Lions Club building, the meeting out in Farmersville. That building was right next to the railroad track, and I believe it was the train that was causing that building to shake so much, it was literally falling off its concrete foundation. And water was running on the floor, out of the pipes in the bathroom and everything. But it was loud, noisy, and there was a lot of happy people around there. And they were saying things, and laughing at things I thought was sick and for a while. And but anyway, the speaker, that chairperson that night at the meeting was Grassel's sponsor, Don W. He's dead now, Don Wilson. And he was a respectable man. He was a postmaster for that area out there. And he was talking about the incomprehensible demoralization that we get to in our disease. And when he got through sharing that night, he said, "Jerry, call on you." And I stood up that night for the first time. I didn't act like a smart aleck little asshole that I was. I stood up and I tried to talk, and I started crying and snot running out of my nose. And I says, "I don't know what I am, but I need help." And that was the beginning of a good life, because I did get help. Those two guys, they took me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we got on our knees in that muffler shop office on that concrete floor, and I didn't know the third step prayer at that time, but they did. And they said the third step prayer, and I read it, and we got through that. And they started working with me through these steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they said, "We're going to do them in the order that they're in, and we're going to use the big book, and we're going to use the 12x12. And when it refers from one to the other, we're going to go there." And those two guys cared enough about this drunk to do that. And through those steps, a psychic change took place within inside me. I was a self-spoiled, arrogant, obnoxious little prick, you might say, because I lived and I did what I wanted to do. I don't know, to this day, I don't know why God, blessed me with so many things in my life before I got sober. So he's blessed me with more since then. But After going through those steps, I learned that I had to give this thing away to be able to keep it. And that's been very important for me. For the first 18 years of my sobriety, I didn't keep track. I don't know how many people I sponsored and how many times I got up from my dinner table at home when I'd get a call. We used to do a lot of 12-step calls. You don't hear too much about them anymore. But if it was a holiday and we had relatives at the house or a big dinner or whatever, if I got a 12-step call, I was gone. I went on that 12-step call. And was a big part of my sobriety, was doing that and keeping my sobriety. And before I got here, I did a lot of tournament fishing, bass fishing, and I did well at it. And when I got sober, after about 6-9 months, I decided I was going to try it again. And I went to a tournament, and I fished real well. And I won that tournament. But when they were giving me the money and the trophy, I couldn't handle it because the guys were teaching me how to be humble, you know, and I couldn't be humble doing that. I never fished another bass tournament, and that was a big part of my life. There's some people here in the room tonight that know that. And I'll tell you how I got the nickname Bubba. That was through bass fishing. One year, I think it was in 1983, I was blessed. I got to buy a new bass boat, and I fished a circuit that year that they had 7 tournaments. And I won 6 of them. I was second in the other and had big fish for that tournament. So at the end of the year, over at Lake San Antone, the baseball player, Bobby Bonds, he has a brother named Robert Bonds. And he was a football player, a pro football player, and he blew out his knee. And he was a professor and a coach over at Cal Poly. And he fished that circuit that year. And big, loud, boisterous guy. And he was, announcing, and he was the MC at the ceremonies. And they were giving out all the trophies and everything. And it got to me, and he says, and this guy, he says, you guys call him Jerry Weatherford. But he says, in football, anybody kicks our ass this bad, we call him Bubba. You know? And the guy that worked on my boat and sponsored me and did the maintenance on it, and I took care of his exhaust work and all welding and straightening of troll motor shafts and things, we traded that out. And when I got home, he says, I'm going to take your boat and service it. It's due. Well, he serviced my boat, but when he brought it back on the Mercury motor up on the top panel, I had Jerry Weatherford and script writing and drop shadowed. You know, I'd paid Reuben to do all of this. And on the bottom it says, from Tulare, where you're from. But when I got my boat back, all of that was gone, and in big quotation marks up there in big block letters was Bubba on my boat. So that's this name, name Bubba, has kind of stuck with me. And I sold my boat this year. I had that boat all these years. I sold it to one of my good friends that died from alcoholism. He never could get this. His son and his grandson, they fished today together. And I sold him that boat. I basically gave it to him for what I sold it to him for, because I know it would go to a good place. So anyway, after working this out, You know, you come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and a lot of people will tell you, well, it's going to be a bed of roses now, life's a bowl of cherries and all this stuff. Well, I've been through more sober since I've became a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and God had God back in my life. I've been through more than I ever did before. I didn't have all those problems. I've been through cancer 3 times, and thank God I'm on the good side of it. You know, and I've had 2 heart procedures, and got through that, and I've went through a divorce, as I told you, 6 years sober. Well, when I'm in 1998, the property where my business was, the developer bought it, put in Kohl's Shopping Center. So here I am, you know, and the city of Visalia is giving me a bad time, won't give me a conditional use permit to do business where I want to. So I just closed that business down, walked away from it, you know. And the main thing is I didn't drink through any of that. Didn't even think about drinking. And the reason I didn't, because that obsession to drink was removed from me when I was about 6-7 months, as best I can remember, into the program. And a guy told me at a meeting after the meeting, we were at the old Denny's when it was on Noble over by the shopping center there. He told me, I told him that. I said, wow, I'm scared to death. He said, what's wrong? And I said, I just realized I haven't had that obsession to drink or use for a few months now. And he told me the most important thing I think I ever heard was, as long as you keep your spiritual house in order, that obsession will not return. But he says, if you don't, that obsession will return. And, you know, I've been through a lot of stuff sober, and I got through it without even thinking of taking a drink. And believe me, that wasn't me before I got here. And I owe this all, you know, to my higher power, which I call God, and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and people that cared enough about me to guide me through this program, you know, and work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then my sponsors told me, once you work them, now you're going to have to apply them and live them in your life. And the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's a phenomenal program. It's so simple. And I thought in the beginning, how can something this simple work for a complicated guy like me? And it's worked. And I'm very grateful that I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I feel, you know, God, I've told you before, God blessed me a lot before I got here. Well, he's blessed me with a lot since I've been here. And I've got 6 granddaughters from my first marriage, and I have a granddaughter, and I have a daughter and a son, now stepson and granddaughter and daughter. They from the marriage I'm in now, and you know, I have a lot of things. I have a good home. I have a lot of friends. I've always been a people call us gearheads, I guess, guys that like cars and do them. Well, I've been retired now. The end of February will be 13 years, and I didn't think I would live long enough to retire. But I have, and I get to restore the cars that I want to restore today, and have fun with them. I just finished one here a couple weeks ago. It's one that I've wanted all my life, and as long as I can remember getting into the street rods and hot rods and doing them. And last year, I built one with a friend of mine, and we flipped it. We sold it, and sold it to my stepson's girlfriend, you know. And this one, I got to do for myself this year, and I'm having a ball with it. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying life, and my sobriety is the most important thing to me in my life, because without it, I don't have anything. And I keep my program pretty simple. I read from the big book and the 12x12 periodically now. And but there's one tool I have that I use every day. It was given to me when I was first sober, and I know it's the same one, because on the inside of the cover it's got $6.50. You know, they cost about double that now, and or more. And I read every morning. That's the first thing I do. And not with disrespect, but on the marble throne, you know, my morning constitutional, that's, I get into that 24-hour day book, and I pay close attention to it, and I try to apply what's in there, the thought for the day, the meditation for the day, and the prayer for the day, to what's going on in my life. I'm selfish to that degree. I want to take care of my sobriety, and I want to take care of me so I can stay sober. And as many times as I've read the 17th of December, today, the prayer for the day just hit me between the eyes. I said, wow, why haven't I seen or thought of this before? See, religion never worked for me, because I was rebellious and everything, and I chose to live the God will run, you know, self will run riot life. But today in that prayer, it says that spirituality is faith, hope, and one, love. Faith, hope, and love is what spirituality is. And I'm a very spiritual person today. You know, I'm not ashamed to admit that. I'm not ashamed to admit that I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in the readings tonight, they talked about the doctors you can see and go, and they'll give you someone to work with. Well, that doctor that I told he could put his advice where the sun don't shine the rest of the year, as he practiced in Tulare and Visalia, when he had an alcoholic that needed help, I told him I would help, and he called me quite a few times. So that was a way to make amends. So I hope you guys can get something out of that. But if you're here, you probably have a reason you're here. And believe me, this sober life and a spiritual life, you know, God will bless you many times. Thank you.